Since anti-cannabis propaganda is so pervasive in Western culture, it can be hard to believe the plant is actually safer than many legal drugs and has medicinal qualities. In the United States, cannabis is even classified as a Schedule 1 narcotic alongside heroin, but higher than meth, which is Schedule 2. Schedule 1 substances are considered to have no medical applications. The plant's illicit status has led to lots of scientific research into the potential harms of cannabis while ignoring its benefits.
The FDA says marijuana is harmful, right? We know that. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, mayor of New York, was quoted as saying medical marijuana is the greatest hoax of all time. You've looked at the evidence, and by the way, you were in that camp, right? I mean, you agree. You looked at the evidence, and I remember a few weeks ago sitting and talking to you, and you said, I have this documentary coming up, and I think the government is reprehensible for not allowing pot.
I'm surprised by both Mayor Bloomberg's comments and how long the government has been sort of keeping this position about classifying marijuana as one of the most dangerous substances out there. I mean, Mayor Bloomberg usually does a pretty good job looking at the science, but let me assure him and other people who are interested in this that there is real science now out there. I will tell you part of the issue, Aaron, when we were talking the other night, is that if you go look at the medical journals right now and look at medical marijuana, some 20,000 papers will pop up. But the vast majority of, more than 90% of them, are looking, designed to look at the harm of marijuana. And very few are actually looking at the benefit. And it paints a very distorted picture, and one that I think is very misleading. I think we've all been misled, and you know, I've apologized for my own role in misleading people as well. But it is a very distorted picture. I searched further, I searched deeper, I looked outside the country, I looked in smaller labs, I listened to patients. This is a substance that can have significant medical value. It should not be a Schedule 1 substance.
Right.
It has medical value, and that's part of the reason I changed my own mind on this.
Despite popular belief, many studies indicate cannabis does not harm a user's lungs. For example, one study by researchers at the University of California, San Francisco, and the University of Alabama at Birmingham showed that while cannabis contains some of the same chemicals as tobacco, it doesn't carry the same risks for lung disease. The study was conducted over 20 years with more than 5,000 participants aged 13 to 30. Furthermore, the American Association for Cancer Research analyzed 6 studies of more than 5,100 cannabis users over 14 years. They concluded that there is no risk of lung cancer from smoking the drug, regardless of how much cannabis is consumed. Likewise, a study of 2,000 people by the University of California at Los Angeles found that cannabis does not cause lung, head, or neck cancers. For people still wary of smoking's ill effects, many of the studies used in this video claim that vaporized and edible cannabis eliminates any possible risk to the respiratory system.
If you have any sort of predisposition to lung problems, if you've got diminished pulmonary function, then you would want to either use a vaporizer or eat the cannabis instead of smoking it. You know, the issue with eating it is that you actually create a new drug. THC, which everybody knows is the component in cannabis that makes you feel altered, but is also the medicine. When you eat it, your liver breaks THC down into another component called 11-hydroxy-THC, and that can feel a little bit more disorienting or psychedelic. So typically when you eat pot, it gets you a little bit more altered than when you smoke it, and also it lasts much longer when you eat it. So if you want to be able to titrate your dose, you're better off smoking or vaporizing than eating it. But you know, the other thing that's happening a lot now, Sanjay, which is interesting, is that people are juicing the whole plant. And what's good about juicing the whole plant is you don't get high. You get all the medicinal effects from the plant, but you don't become altered. And because it's illegal and so expensive, you really can't juice the whole plant in many other states in the country. But if this were a medicine, you would have that option.
There are even studies suggesting cannabis may kill cancer cells. According to lab and mouse studies by researchers at Harvard University, THC cuts lung cancer tumor growth in half while significantly reducing the ability of cancer to spread.
Very early studies on mice in Israel, Spain, and the United States are now showing the potential of marijuana to kill cancer cells.
Dr. Nayagar Kotti, he's narrowing in on the potential of cannabinoids to kill immune cells that have mutated and become cancerous. Once they become cancerous, they no longer die a normal cell death. Instead, they begin growing and spreading uncontrollably.
We were one of the first labs to demonstrate basically that not only the immune cells, the normal immune cells express these cannabinoid receptors called the CB2 receptors, but also that when these immune cells get transformed and they become cancer, to our surprise, we found that these cancer cells continue to express these CB2 receptors.
This was an exciting discovery because the CB2 receptor can act like a target for the cannabinoids. Once they bind with the receptor, they can tell the cancer cell to die.
So basically telling the cells basically to commit suicide, and that's what they do. And we demonstrated that that would be the mechanism by which the cannabinoids can kill the cancer, and therefore it can be used effectively as an anti-cancer agent.
Dr. Nayagarkhati and his researchers were able to eradicate almost 100% of the cancer in test tubes, but they were skeptical they would see similar results when they moved on to tumors in mice.
To our surprise, we found that almost 25 to 30% of the mice completely rejected the tumor. They were completely cured. And in addition, we found that the remaining mice also, there was a significant reduction in the volume or the size of the tumors as well.
The lab results have been so promising that Dr. Nayagarkhati is beginning clinical trials with leukemia patients.
Based on scientific evidence, there are many other illnesses and symptoms helped by the THC, CBD, and other cannabinoids found in cannabis.
The main indications for using medicinal cannabis are to decrease nausea and to stimulate appetite. It also can be used for chronic pain. It's particularly good for neuropathic pain, the sort of pins and needles that the opiates aren't very good at treating. It's also a good muscle relaxer, and it's an anti-inflammatory and a free radical scavenger, and it also helps quite a bit with autoimmune disorders, sort of regulating the immune system. So it can be used for a whole host of medical indications and psychiatric indications as well.
Multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, rheumatoid arthritis, Tourette's, epilepsy, heart disease, obesity, various mental illnesses, and the holy grail of medicine, a cancer cure.
And when you see how cannabis has helped children with seizures, it is impossible to deny the plant's medical abilities.
Dravet syndrome. It is severe, intractable epilepsy. The seizures start during the first year of life and are unstoppable, difficult to control, and very damaging.
Severe behavioral problems, attention deficit, hyperactivity, the self-injury, you know, banging her head on the floor and pulling her hair out and like a possessed child. This isn't your perfect, happy Charlotte.
It was a race against time. Many Dravet kids die young in early childhood. Charlotte was almost three. For the next 2 years, the Figgies tried everything. Strange diets, acupuncture, and dozens of powerful drugs like Valium, Ativan, phenobarbital. But nothing seemed to help. Even worse, some of the medications nearly killed her.
After one dose, she stops breathing. And after two doses, her heart will stop.
Did you have to do CPR then on her yourself?
Yes. I remember when her heart stopped and I had her pulse and I lost her pulse. There was just nothing. The ambulance is on its way.
She survived.
Mommy's here.
But now it was fall of 2011, and Charlotte was 5 years old.
When things were at their worst, she just sees all night, and the kids are sleeping either in my room or next door. They can hear her the seizure scream all night, 50 times a night. And Chase would come in the morning and just, this is her twin, and just hug her and like rub her head and say, I'm just so glad you survived through the night last night.
And then Charlotte's condition got worse. 300 seizures a week, almost two every hour. She was not talking or moving, basically catatonic. As a last resort, doctors wanted to either prescribe a powerful veterinary drug used on epileptic dogs or put Charlotte in a medically induced coma so her brain and body could rest. For Paige, those were not good options. But maybe, just maybe, marijuana now was. It's the CBD that scientists think modulates electrical and chemical activity to help quiet the excessive activity in the brain that causes seizures.
I measured it with a syringe and squirted it under her tongue. She didn't have a seizure that day. And then she didn't have a seizure that night.
Did you sit there and look at your watch? And...
Right, I thought, this is crazy. And then she didn't have one the next day. And then the next day. And I thought, she would have had 100 by now.
The child, who had had 300 seizures a week, was now down to just one. every 7 days.
Some studies, like one by researchers at the University of California San Diego School of Medicine, say cannabis relieves the symptoms of multiple sclerosis, including muscle tightness, contractions, and pain. Cannabis is also frequently used by cancer and HIV/AIDS patients to treat nausea, weight loss, and pain. Recently, however, a study by researchers at Louisiana State University found a daily dose of THC actually decreased the spread of HIV in monkeys. Moreover, according to a study of more than 4,600 people published in the American Journal of Medicine, cannabis users have better blood sugar control, including significantly lower fasting insulin, and a decreased likelihood of being insulin resistant. This means cannabis may lower the risk of diabetes. Children with autism also benefit from the plant.
11-year-old Alex Eccles is severely autistic, his self-destructive behavior brought on by tuberous sclerosis, a genetic disorder that affects about 50,000 people in the U.S. It causes growths in organs, in Alex's case, primarily in the brain. Those growths can lead to seizures and autism. Alex can't communicate with words, making it difficult to understand what's troubling him.
Indescribable. It was horrifying. He was able to just be acting normal and all of a sudden just run himself to a wall.
By the time Alex was 5, it was intense, self-directed rage. Alex headbutted anything he could, bruising his forehead so badly, his father says the blood would drain until Alex's entire face was black and blue. They got him a helmet, swaddled him like a newborn, tried mood-altering drugs. But Alex's daily violent behavior became the Eugene family's new normal. When he was 8, they made the heartbreaking decision to move Alex into a state-funded group home.
It was like we were throwing him away.
His parents have turned to a controversial treatment, medical marijuana, to manage Alex's behavior. And after a few months of treatment, the Eccles say they saw a dramatic improvement.
He went from hitting himself, bloodying his face, within an hour, hour and a half, he would be playing with toys, using his hands, something that at that time was almost unheard of.
It's an extremely rare occurrence for Alex.
Alex's group home won't give him the marijuana, so about 3 times a week, his parents give him a liquid form of the drug.
While research into cannabis is still in its infancy, it has been proven to be less harmful than many illegal and legal drugs. For example, according to the US CDC and Health Canada, tobacco-related diseases kill about 480,000 Americans and 40,000 Canadians every year. Alcohol kills about 88,000 Americans and 6,700 Canadians each year. Despite its demonization, it is impossible to overdose on cannabis.
Botticelli, how many marijuana overdose deaths were there in the most recent year you have available?
To my knowledge, I don't know if there have been instances of specific overdose-related
deaths. You talked about marijuana deaths, and I want to be clear. I'm not trying to trap you.
No.
How many marijuana deaths have there been in the last 5 years?
So if you're referring to overdoses, I'm not sure of those numbers. If you're referring to fatalities,
then I would like to have you supply us with how many overdose deaths there were, because I have heard from experts whose judgment I respect that they don't know of any.
Furthermore, according to a study published in the British Columbia Mental Health and Addictions Journal, health-related costs for alcohol consumers are 8 times greater than healthcare costs for cannabis users. In fact, researchers at the Boston Medical Center and Boston University School of Medicine found that cannabis does not increase users' frequency of hospital visits. Their findings were based on a study of 589 adult cannabis users. More shockingly, according to the CDC, someone dies of a prescription drug overdose every 19 minutes in the United States, while Canada does not even keep track of prescription drug death statistics. However, in the past decade, hundreds of Canadians have been killed by Tylenol, while tens of thousands more have been hospitalized by the over-the-counter painkiller, according to Statistics Canada. In the US, Tylenol causes about 458 deaths, 56,000 emergency room visits, and 26,000 hospitalizations annually.
What's more dangerous and what is more addictive?
Cocaine
and meth or marijuana? Pretty simple.
I think that conversation minimizes the harm.
No, I'm not trying to minimize the harm. I want to know which is more dangerous and addictive.
I go back as a public health person. You know, one of the things that we look at is not what's the relative risk of one drug.
Okay. Let me just say, But I think that your equivocation right there, being unable to answer something clearly and definitively when there is unquestioned evidence to the contrary, is why young people don't believe the propaganda, why they think it's benign. If a professional like you cannot answer clearly that meth is more dangerous than marijuana, which every kid on the street knows, which every parent knows, if you can't answer that, maybe that's why we're failing to educate people about the dangers. I don't want kids smoking marijuana. I agree with the chairman. But if the deputy director of the Office of Drug Policy can't answer that question, how do you expect high school kids to take you seriously?
While most scientific evidence suggests cannabis is relatively safe and in many cases beneficial for adults, some studies indicate youth under 18 may see mental declines with heavy cannabis use. For example, a study by researchers at the University of Otago in New Zealand found teens who regularly consume cannabis risk a long-term IQ drop. More than 1,000 subjects were tested at 13 before any significant cannabis use, then again at 38. It is important to note that the decline was not found in people who started using cannabis after age 18. Furthermore, a study of 97 teens by Northwestern University found cannabis may alter the working memory of adolescents that use the drug heavily. However, the group of 16 to 17 year old users studied used cannabis daily for 3 years to negatively impact their memory.
What we see is a very big difference in people who begin to smoke prior to the age of 16 and those who smoke after age 16, what we call early versus later onset.
Gruber's brain scans show that the white matter, those are the highways that help the brain communicate from one point to another, are impaired in those who start smoking early.
Maybe there's underlying white matter connectivity differences.
That's your concern, it sounds like, that those highways, those white matter highways, are just more disrupted in people who start smoking early.
That's what we see.
Perhaps not surprising, given what we know about the young developing brain.
That's a very delicate time in brain development, and that's not a good time to be taking any drugs.
Other research indicates there may be no adverse effects of cannabis use on developing brains. According to a study of 92 adolescents by researchers at UC San Diego, teenage cannabis users are not likely to have reduced brain tissue health, unlike teens that drink alcohol. Brain scans of 16 to 20-year-olds that consumed 5 or more drinks at least twice a week showed reduced white matter brain tissue health, which can negatively affect memory, attention, and decision-making. This effect was not present in brain scans of cannabis users. Additionally, another study of 16 to 19-year-old students by researchers at UC San Diego found that cannabis may protect the brain from some of the damage caused by binge drinking. All of the studies used to make this video emphasize that additional research into cannabis is necessary. With more relaxed cannabis laws, more scientists will be able to access the plant, and everyone will have a better understanding of the drug's potential benefits and harms.